Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. The prison of religion this hour, those young girls praying, you can hear it there, essentially at gunpoint by their Boko Haram captors. Converted to Islam, says the terrorist video released to the world, bound for slavery, Boko Haram said last week. Also this hour, when one's religion in prison becomes a reason to be singled out by police investigators looking for informants, we'll talk about a controversial NYPD program here in New York. We will also speak about a potential Chinese game changer in the South China Sea confronting Vietnam, an update on what illegal voting means for the future of Ukraine, and maybe Freakonomics author and podcast host Stephen Dubner can make sense of any of this. He'll be with us later this hour. But first, we return to Nigeria. More than 200 girls from a school in Chibok remain in the custody of Boko Haram kidnappers. Joining me now is Mahmoud Kamara, Nigeria researcher for Amnesty International. Mahmoud, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
How do you evaluate the message coming through in these very disturbing images?
Yeah, it's quite shocking to see and hear what is coming out of Nigeria, especially with regards to the abduction of these children. We are in solidarity with the parents of these girls, asking the leadership of Boko Haram to release them immediately and unconditionally, and for the Nigerian authorities and the international community to do and take all lawful measures to help rescue these girls and reunite them with their families.
Do you think Boko Haram is trying to ignite a sectarian war, a religious war in Nigeria with these controversial images saying they've been converted to Islam, these girls?
It's been a sectarian violence from the start. There have been religious undertones, although it has wider socio-political and dynamics as well. But you can't take away religion from the ongoing conflict in northeast of Nigeria. And it's a demand that they have been pursuing in a very deadly manner and has resulted in the loss of lives of thousands of people and the disappearance of hundreds of people, especially children and young people and women and the aged.
Did you personally warn the Nigerian government that this attack was likely to happen? And do you typically gather intelligence on the ground, Amnesty International, in ways of trying to prevent attacks like this?
Well, we got the information about the warning to the security forces after the attack had taken place. We did not get the information before the attack took place. When we received our information, it took us weeks to verify and cross-check the information. And when we got that information, we sent correspondences to the Nigerian authorities seeking clarification and confirmation, but no response was received from the Nigerian authorities. And we had very reliable information from senior officers in the military, in the Nigerian military hierarchy, who confirmed that some warning was given prior to the attack on Chibok town.
So just to be absolutely clear, Amnesty International didn't have prior knowledge, but you are aware that Nigerian military officials did have prior knowledge and did nothing.
Exactly. The small group of Nigerian officers who were based in Chibok town actually fought the Boko Haram fighters on the night, on the 14th of April. Because of the number, they were overpowered and outgunned, and they had to retreat. But what we were told was that when the information was initially transmitted to the Nigerian security forces around 7 p.m. on the 14th of April, they thought it was just the usual routine information from their vigilantes or from the villagers. So no preparation was made, even after the Boko Haram fighters took over the town, and the fighting lasted until 3:30 a.m. on the 15th of April. The reinforcement never came.
Mahmoud Kamara, how satisfied are you with the international response that seems to be growing at this point? And is Amnesty International on the front lines, really, with the responsibility to try and prevent attacks like this? Has your role shifted?
Amnesty International is a research and campaigning organization. We investigate, we document and report human rights abuses and violations by both state and non-state actors. And we have been covering the conflict in Nigeria since it started. We have documented hundreds of testimonies and cases of human rights abuses and violations by both state and non-state actors. And going back to the international response, it's good that everybody is talking about it. It's good that people are offering assistance, but our concern is why did it take so long for the world to come to the aid of these families, of these parents, of these ordinary people in Nigeria? Why did it take so long for international support to be provided or even requested?
Why do you think it took so long?
I think it took this long for the international community or the Nigerian authorities to respond, because there have been lots of cases in the past where people have been killed and people have been slaughtered, and it goes unreported. We think that a lot of people have responsibilities that they should have taken that they didn't take.
Mahmoud Kamara is Nigerian researcher for the Amnesty International organization based in Nigeria. Mahmoud, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.